First Samuel chapter 31. We went all the way through, but we didn't finish the last chapter. Last week we looked at, one of the things we looked at is Saul going to the Witch of Endor and what transpired there and how the devil spirit told him that he and his sons would die. And this kind of showed, it said in the beginning of that chapter that Saul had gotten rid of all those with familiar spirits and wizards. So in the beginning of his kingship or his reign, he was walking with God and doing the will of God. But towards the end of his life, he disobeyed God, and it was a road down. Things kept getting worse and worse. He kept making excuses. And finally, he resorts to a witch and familiar spirits. And so that wasn't a good thing. And then in chapter 30, we looked at David and how he went to God for help. And so God did just what he promised to David. And then David went and blessed all the peoples where in the different places where he and his men had been. So now we get to chapter 31, and it says, "Now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell down slain in Mount Gilboa. And the Philistines followed hard upon Saul and upon his sons, and the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, Saul's sons. And the battle went Saul against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was sore wounded of the archers." He was sore wounded. "Then said Saul unto his armor bearer, Draw thy sword and thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell upon it. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise upon his sword and died with him. So Saul died and his three sons and his armor bearer and all his men that same day together." And it should read, "all his mighty men." But anyway, okay, if you just look over probably the next page in 2 Samuel and chapter 1, verse 8, it says, let's go a little back a little. Verse 6, "And the young man that told him," he was speaking to David, "as I happened by chance upon Mount Gilboa, behold, Saul leaned upon a spear, and lo, the chariots and horsemen followed hard after him. And when he had looked behind him, he saw me and called unto me, and I answered, Here am I. And he said unto me, Who art thou? And I answered him, I am an Amalekite. And he said unto me again, Stand, I pray thee, upon me and slay me, for the anguish has come upon me, because my life is yet whole in me. So I stood upon him and slew him, because I was sure that he could not live after that he was fallen. And I took the crown that was upon his head and the bracelets that were upon his arm, and have brought them hither unto my Lord," meaning David. And then if you hold your place, because you go to 1 Chronicles chapter 10, chapter 10 of 1 Chronicles, and verse 1. "Now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from the Philistines and fell down slain in Mount Gilboa. And the Philistines followed hard after Saul, and after his sons, and the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, the sons of Saul, and the battle went sore against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was wounded of the archers. Then said Saul to his armor bearer, "Draw thy sword, and thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and abuse me." But his armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. So Saul took a sword and fell upon it. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise on the sword and died. So Saul died, and his three sons and all his house died together. And when all the men of Israel that were in the valley saw they fled, and that Saul and his sons were dead, that they forsook their cities and fled, and the Philistines came and dwelt in them. Wow, quite a turn of events. But you see, there's a little difference between 1 Samuel, where it says, you know, he went on his sword and died, and then in 2 Samuel and Chronicles, you know, there's this other guy, the Amalekite. So the order is, and I got this from Schofield's Bible, he puts this out. The order is, number one, Saul is hit, wounded mortally or potentially slain by the Philistines. You know, they shot arrows. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, either to escape agony or insult by the enemy, he falls upon his sword, and his armor bearer, supposing him to be dead, slew himself. But Saul was not dead, raising himself up upon his spear. You know, he grabbed his spear and pulled himself up. He besought the Amalekite to put him to death. So that's kind of how that all fits together. And we had to look at other records, which is part of how we study the word. You know, we compare scriptures and we look at different scriptures that have the same or identical record. Yes. Okay. That's true. It's very possible. That's possible. It doesn't say that, but okay, well, maybe. But at any rate, so we're going to go back to 1 Samuel 31. It says, and when the men of Israel that were on the other side of the valley, And when the men of Israel were on the other side of the valley, and they that were on the other side of Jordan saw that the men of Israel fled, and that Saul and his sons were dead, they forsook the cities and fled, and the Philistines came and dwelt in them. And it came to pass on the morrow, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, they found Saul and his three sons fallen in Mount Gilboa. And they cut off his head and stripped off his armor and sent into the land of the Philistines round about to punish it in the house of their idols and among the people. And they put his armor in the house of Ashtaroth, and they fastened his body to the wall of Bethshan. And when the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead heard that which the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and went all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bethshan and came to Jabesh and burned them there. And they took their bones and buried them under the tree of Jabesh at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. So that was the what happened there. So that's the end of Saul.
And Jonathan, that's sad.
Yeah. And Jonathan, yes.
Sad, David's friend.
I don't want you to go, but, well, yes. Go back to 1 Chronicles 10. So, it says in verse 13, so Saul died for his transgression, which he committed against the Lord, even
First
against
Chronicles.
First Chronicles 10,
okay.
Verse 13.
Oh, 13, I'm sorry.
So Saul died for his transgressions, which committed against the Lord, even against the word of the Lord, which he kept not, and also for asking counsel of one that had familiar spirits, a familiar spirit, not of the Lord, and inquired not of the Lord. Therefore he slew him and turned the kingdom unto David, the son of Jesse. So, now, from what I was taught and in one of Dr. Werwell's books, it says that 1 and 2 Samuel and the books of Kings are written from man's point of view. So in Samuel, it records the facts in regards to the death of Saul. In the books of Chronicles, they are from God's point of view. So that is why in chapter 10 of 1 Chronicles, it gives the reasons for Saul's death. Okay? So now we'll go back to 2 Samuel chapter 1. And we're going to read a couple of things that are going to repeat what we just already read, but that's okay. Now it came to pass, verse 1, after the death of Saul, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, and David had abode 2 days in Ziklag, it came even to pass on the third day that, behold, a man came out of the camp from Saul with his clothes rent and earth upon his head. And so it was when he came to David that he fell on the earth and did obeisance. You know, he paid him tribute, or, you know, showed his humility before David. And David said unto him, from whence comest thou? And he said unto him, out of the camp of Israel am I escaped. And David said unto him, how went the matter? I pray thee, tell me. And he answered that the people are fled from the battle, and many of the people also are fallen and dead. And Saul and Jonathan, his son, are dead also. And David said unto the young man that told him, how knowest thou that Saul and Jonathan, his son, be dead? And the young man that told him said, I happened by chance upon the Mount Gilboa. Behold, Saul leaned upon his spear, and lo, the chariots and horsemen followed hard after him. And when he looked behind him, he saw me and called unto me. And I answered, here am I. And he said unto me, who art thou? And I said, and I answered him, I am an Amalekite. And he said unto me again, stand, I pray thee, upon me and slay me, for the anguish is come upon me, because my life is yet whole in me. So I stood upon him and slew him, because I was sure that he could not live after that he was fallen. And I took the crown, and that was upon his head, and the bracelet that was on his arm, and have brought them hither unto my Lord. Now, you know, one of the things, and maybe this is, it makes sense as far as what Greg said, that the guy was lying, because initially, to his armor bearer, we learned that he didn't want to be killed by an uncircumcised person. Mm-hmm. And but then this guy admits that he's an Amalekite. Uh-huh. Well, an Amalekite was an uncircumcised guy. So he wouldn't have wanted to be killed by him. So it's very possible that what Greg said is probably true. But it doesn't tell us that, but it's an interesting point. So, verse 13. Let's see. Where am I? Okay, verse 11. Then David took hold on his clothes and rent them, and likewise all the men that were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until even, for Jonathan his son, and for the people of the Lord, and for the house of Israel, because they were fallen by the sword. So this really affected David in a terrible way. And David said unto the young man that told him, whence art thou? And he answered, I am a son of a stranger, an Amalekite. And David said unto him, how wast thou not afraid to stretch forth thine hand to destroy the Lord's anointed? And David called one of the young men and said, go near and fall upon him. And he smote him that he died. And David said unto him, thy blood be upon thy head, for thy mouth hath testified against thee, saying, I have slain the Lord's anointed. So all that had transpired and all the wrong and evil that Saul had committed, and yet David still showed him great respect as the Lord's anointed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's just incredible how much love and respect that David had for him and for what it represented to be anointed of the Lord.
Right.
And it didn't matter how many mistakes he made or how bad he was. And David lamented with this lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan his son. And of course, he and Jonathan were so close and they loved each other so much. Also, he bade them teach the children of Judah to use this, to use of the bow. Behold, it is written in the book of Jasher. the book of Jasher. It's, you know, there's not no books that exist that are called this. But it's spoken of us several times in the Old Testament. Supposedly songs and poetry celebrating Israel's glories. The Septuagint calls it the Book of Right, or the Book of the Upright. So, verse 19. David goes on, the beauty of Israel is slain upon the high places. How are the mighty fallen? Tell it not in Gath, publish it not in the streets of Ascalon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph. Ye mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew, neither let there be rain upon you, nor fields of offerings, for there the shield of the mighty is vilely cast away, the shield of Saul, as though he had not been anointed with oil. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, and the sword of Saul returned not empty. Saul and Jonathan were lovely and pleasant in their lives, and in their death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles, and they were stronger than lions. So he's paying, you know, it's a eulogy.
Mm-hmm. Right?
It's a eulogy for Saul and for Jonathan. Ye daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in scarlet and with other delights, who put on ornaments of gold upon your apparel. How are the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle? O Jonathan, thou wast slain in thine high places. I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of a woman. Mm-hmm. How are the mighty fallen and the weapons of war perished? So you could see that this really
affected David,
and he really loved him, and it really was a terrible thing for him. So, chapter 2. And it came to pass after this, David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I go up into the cities of Judah? And the Lord said unto him, go up. And David said, whither shall I go up? And he said, unto Hebron. So David, you know, he's asking God what he should do. He's not just going on his own. He's just not, oh, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. But he asks God what to do, and God tells him. So David went up thither, and his two wives also, Abinoam the Jezreelitess, and Abigail, Nabal's wife, the Carmelite. And his men that were with him did David bring up every man with his household, and they dwelt in the cities of Hebron. So all those 600 guys and their families went with him. And the men of Judah came, and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. And they told David, saying, that the men of Jabesh Gilead were they that buried Saul. So immediately the people of Judah anoint David king. But remember, Samuel had previously anointed him as Well, Samuel had anointed him as God had directed him to do. If you hold your place here and go back to 1 Samuel 16, if you want, if you don't want, I'll just read it to you. 1 Samuel 16, in verse 11. And Samuel said unto Jesse, "Are here all thy children?" And he said, "There remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he keepeth the sheep." And Samuel said unto Jesse, "Send and fetch him, for we will not sit down till he come hither." Hither. And he, why can't they just say till he comes here? And he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy, you know, well built, and withal of a beautiful countenance and goodly to look at. He was hot. And the Lord said, "Arise, anoint him, for this is he." Then Samuel took the horn of oil, it's anointing oil, and he anointed him in the midst of his brethren, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. So Samuel rose up and went to Ramah. So that was the initial anointing of David, and he was pretty young at that point. And so we go back to 2 Samuel, and of course, a lot has transpired, and here he is in Judah now, and the people recognize him as king. And David sent messengers unto the men of Jabesh Gilead, and said unto them, "Blessed be ye of the Lord, that ye have showed this kindness unto your Lord, even unto Saul, and have buried him. And now the Lord show kindness and truth unto you, and I also will requite you this kindness, because ye have done this thing. Therefore now let your hands be strengthened, and be ye valiant. For your master Saul is dead, and also the house of Judah have anointed me king over them." So he sends this message to these people because they had taken Saul's body back from the Philistines and Jonathan's, and they had buried, given him a correct burial. But in verse 8, but Abner. Now, if you remember back when Saul was hunting for David, and it says he camped out and the whole 3,000 men were around him, and then David snuck in and stole his spear and his water bag, and then David gets out and then he calls and God had put him to sleep, and they wake up and he yells at Abner for not guarding Saul. Remember that? Because Abner was like, you know, the general of the army for Saul. So it says in verse 8, but Abner, the son of Ner, captain of Saul's host, you know, captain of the host means of Saul's army, took Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanaim and made him king over Gilead and over the Asherites and over Jezreel and over the Ephraim, over Benjamin and over all Israel. So this guy Abner, he decides he's the general, and he serves Saul. So he says, well, Saul's son should be the king, right? And so he gets, and he's only got one left. It's, well, actually he's got another one, but he doesn't tell you that here. I'll tell you in a couple of seconds. And he makes him king over Israel. Verse 10, Ish-bosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he began to reign over Israel, and reigned 2 years, but the house of Judah followed David. And the time of David, that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah, was 7 years and 6 months. And Abner, the son of Ner, and the servants of Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, went out from Mahanaim to Gibeon. And Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and the servants of David went out and met together by the pool of Gibeon. And they sat down, the one on one side of the pool and the other on the other side of the pool. And Abner said to Joab, "Let the young men now arise and play before us." And Joab said, "Let them arise." And he doesn't mean that they're going to just play hopscotch or mumbly peg or, you know, a game. They're going to have battles. You know, they came there to settle a score here, see what was going to go on. And there arose and went over by number 12 of Benjamin, which pertained to Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, and the 12 servants of David. And they caught every one his fellow by his head and thrust his sword into the fellow's side, so they fell down together. Wherefore, that place was called Helkath Hasurim, which is in Gibeon, and that means the field. Well, I have several. There's several different ones. This says in my Bible, it says the field of strong men. In another place, it said field of swords. Either way, so we see here that, you know, right from the very beginning, there's a division within Israel. There's the camp of Saul and there's the camp of David. And actually, this goes back even into Judges, where there were divisions in the tribes of Israel. So anyway, so these guys, they're fighting and some die. Verse 17, there was a very sore battle that day, and Abner was beaten and the men of Israel before the servants of David. And there were three sons of Zeruiah there, Joab was the leader of the guys of David, and Abishai and Asahel. And Asahel was light of foot as a wild roe, meaning he could really run. He was fast. And Asahel pursued Abner, and in going, he turned not in the right hand nor the left from following Abner. Then Abner looked behind him and said, "Art thou Asahel?" And he answered, "I am." And Abner said to him, "Turn thee aside to the right hand or to the left, and lay thee hold on one of the young men, and take thee his armor." But Asahel would not turn aside from following of him. And Abner said to Asahel, "Turn thee aside from following me. Wherefore should I smite thee to the ground? How then should I hold up my face to Joab thy brother?" So he said, he doesn't want to hurt him. He's trying to talk him out of chasing him. And he said, "You know, I don't want to hurt you." Howbeit, he refused to turn aside. Wherefore Abner, with the hinder end of the spear, smote him under the fifth rib, that the spear came out behind him. And he fell down there, and he died in the same place. And it came to pass that as many as came to the place where Asahel fell down and died stood still. Joab also and Abishai pursued after Abner, and the sun went down when they were come to the hill of Amnah that lieth before Gia by the way of the wilderness of Gibeon. And the children of Benjamin gathered themselves together after Abner and became one troop and stood on the top of the hill. Then Abner called to Joab and said, "Shall the sword devour forever? Knowest thou not that it will be bitterness in the latter end? How long shall it be then ere thou bid the people return from following their brethren?" And Joab said, "As God liveth, unless thou hadst spoken surely, then in the morning the people had gone up every one from following his brother." So Joab blew the trumpet, and all the people stood still and pursued after Israel no more, neither fought they any more. And Abner and his men walked all that night through the plain and passed over Jordan and went through all Bithron, and they came to Mahanaim. And Joab returned from following Abner, and when he had gathered all the people together, there lacked of David's servants 19 men and Asahel. But the servants of David had smitten Benjamin and of Abner's men, so that 360 men died. They killed 360 men. So that was more than just playing, wasn't it? That was quite a battle. And they took Azahel and they buried him in the sepulcher of his father, which was in Bethlehem. And Joab and his son and his men went all night, and they came to Hebron at the break of day. So this is quite a situation that has turned around. David is now the king, but he's still not king of everybody, because there's division, and there's this son of Saul that is ruling the rest of Israel. The other, well, you don't count the Levites, but David had Judah, and then Ishbosheth had the other 10 plus the two half tribes. So they were all there. Chapter 3, verse 1. Now there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David, but David waxed stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul waxed weaker and weaker. The word waxed means what? Grew. So David's strength grew stronger and stronger, and Ishbosheth, his army and his people were getting weaker and weaker. Even though it was 11 tribes to one, David's overcoming, and we'll see why. And unto David were sons born in Hebron, and his firstborn was Amnon of Hianoam and the Jezreelitess, and his second, Chileab of Abigail, the wife of Nabal the Carmelite, and the third, Absalom, son of Maacah, the daughter of Tamal, king of Geshur, and the fourth, Adonijah, the son of Haggith, and the fifth, Shephareth, the son of Abitai, and the sixth, Ithream by Igia, David's wife. These were born to David in Hebron. He's a, that guy's, I don't know where he had time to do anything else.
He should have been weak.
Yeah,
he should have been growing weaker.
Fighting or making love, one of the two.
Yeah, he's either winning a war or getting another woman and getting another kid. And it came to pass, verse 6, while there was war between the house of Saul and the house of David, that Abner made himself strong for the house of Saul. And Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah. And Ishbosheth said to Abner, "Wherefore hast thou gone in unto my father's concubine?" So Ishbosheth is jealous. But, you know, his father's dead. Then was Abner very wroth with the words of Ishbosheth, and said, "I am a dog's head, which against Judah do show kindness this day unto the house of Saul thy father, to his brethren and to his friends, and have not delivered thee into the hand of David, that thou chargest me today with a fault concerning this woman." You know, Abner's saying, you know, I do so much for you, and I'm holding this thing together. I installed you as king, and you're going to quibble with me over a woman, a concubine? "So do God to Abner and more also, except as the Lord has sworn to David, even so do I to him, to translate the kingdom from the house of Saul and to set up the throne of David over Israel and over Judah from Dan even to Beersheba." So at this point, Abner has a change of heart, and he says, okay, forget about Ishbosheth. I'm going, and I'm going to support David and help him take over all of Israel. And he could not answer Abner a word again, because he feared him, Ishbosheth. And Abner sent messengers to David on his behalf, saying, "Whose is the land?" saying, "Also, make thy league with me, and behold, my hand shall be with thee to bring about all Israel unto thee." So here Abner sends a message to David, and he says, let's make a league, let's make a covenant. It's the same word that's translated covenant other places. So in a covenant, again, is a big deal, right? So it's important to understand that. He's saying, we'll make a covenant, and I will help you to become the king over all of Israel. Verse 13. And he said, well, I will make a league with thee, but one thing I require of thee, that is, thou shalt not see my face except thou first bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when thou comest to see my face. Remember Michal? Uh-huh. That when David first became popular and famous in Israel for killing Goliath, that Saul gave him his daughter, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so now he says, I want my wife back. He didn't forget about her. And David sent messengers to Ishbosheth, Saul's son, saying, deliver me my wife, Michal, which I espoused to me for 100 foreskins of the Philistines. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Saul said, you know, if you get me the foreskins of 100 Philistines, David did it. And Ishbosheth sent and took her from her husband, even from Phaltiel, the son of Lahish, and her husband went with her along, weeping behind her to Bahurim. Then said Abner unto him, go return, and he returned. And Abner had communication with the elders of Israel, saying, ye sought for David in time past to be king over you. Now then do it, for the Lord hath spoken of David, saying, by the hand of thy servant David, I will save my people Israel out of the hand of the Philistines and out of the hand of all their enemies. And Abner also spoke in the ears of Benjamin. And Abner went also to speak in the ears of David in Hebron, and all that seemed good to Israel and that seemed good to the whole house of Benjamin. So Abner came to David to Hebron, and 20 men with him. And David made Abner and the men that were with him a feast. So David received him pretty well, right? And they had a feast, and they made that covenant. And Abner said unto David, I will arise and go, and I will gather all Israel unto my lord the king, that they may make a league with thee, a covenant with thee, and that thou mayest reign over all that thine heart desireth. And David sent Abner away, and he went in peace. And when it says he went in peace, that means what? There's nothing between them. That means that they made that covenant, that David was committed to Abner and Abner was committed to David, and everything was between them was good. No, whatever happened in the past was forgotten about, and they were moving forward. And behold, the servants of David and Joab came from pursuing a troop and brought in a great spoil with them. But Abner was not with David in Hebron, for he had sent him away, and he was gone in peace. Again, he was gone in peace. And when Joab and all the hosts that was with him were come, they told Joab, saying, Abner the son of Ner came to the king, and he has sent him away, and he is gone in peace, which means, you know, David's made peace with him. He's made a covenant with him. Everything's good between them. Then Joab came to the king and said, what hast thou done? Behold, Abner came unto thee. Why is it that thou hast sent him away and he is quite gone? He's upset because why? Because he killed his brother. Yeah. He killed his brother. Thou knowest Abner, the son of Ner, and he came to deceive thee. and to know thy going out and thy coming in, and to know all that thou doest. So he's trying to put a wedge between David and Abner, and he's saying things that are not true. And when Joab was come out from David, he sent messengers after Abner, which brought him again from the well of Sirah, but David knew it not. So Joab does this on his own. He sends messengers out. He says to Abner, come back. David wants to talk to you about some other stuff. And when Abner, verse 27, when Abner was returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside in the gate to speak with him quietly and smote him there under the fifth rib that he died for the blood of Asahel, his brother. So this was, you know, for revenge, right? So so you see here, he did it by deceit. And afterward, when David heard it, he said, I and my kingdom are guiltless before the Lord forever from the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. Let it rest upon the head of Joab and on all of his father's house, and let there not fail from the house of Joab one that hath an issue, or that is a leper, or that leaneth on a staff, or that falleth on the sword, or that lacketh bread. So it's kind of like, I don't want to say a curse, but he's speaking and he's saying, you know, because Joab did this, his family is going to have problems in the future. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, slew Abner because he had slain the brother Asahel at Gibeon in the battle. Now, this is really interesting how David handles this. Verse 31, and David said to Joab, to all the people that were with him, rend your clothes and gird you with sackcloth and mourn before Abner. And the king David himself followed the bier. He's giving Abner an honorable burial. He's saying, you know, this guy was under my protection. I made a covenant with him. And so now, Joab, you and your people, you're going to go before the bier, you know, the coffin that they're carrying, and I'm going to follow it. And they buried Abner in Hebron, and the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept. And the king lamented over Abner and said, died Abner as a fool dieth? Thy hands were not bound, nor thy feet put into fetters. As a man falls before wicked men, so fellest them. And all the people wept again over him. So he's calling Joab an evil guy. Mm-hmm. He was deceitful in this. And when all the people came to cause David to eat meat while it was yet day, David swore, saying, so do God it to me, and more also if I taste bread or aught else till the sun be down. And all the people took notice of it, and it pleased them, as whatsoever the king did pleased all the people. You know, they appreciated and they saw his integrity and his heart, right? He was honest and he had compassion and he cared. So, and he had integrity about this whole matter. He didn't have any guilt in it. And, you know, Abner killed Asahel, and it was a result of a battle. And he actually tried to get him not to follow him. Twice he told him to stop his pursuit. And Joab and his brother killed Abner. You know, they tricked him and they used deceit and they jumped him. So it was really a terrible thing. Anyway, where are we now?
34.
34. Thy hands were not bound, nor thy feet put in fetters, as a man falleth before a wicked man, as fellest thou. And all the people wept again. And when the people came to the cause, okay, we saw that. And all the people took notice, and it pleased them at whatsoever the king did, pleased all the people. For all the people and all Israel understood that day it was not the king to slay Abner, the son of Ner. And the king said unto his servants, know ye not that there is a prince and a great man fallen this day in Israel? And I am this day weak, though anointed king, and these men, the sons of Zariah, be too hard for me, and the Lord shall reward the doer of evil according to his wickedness. So that's a pretty strong, what he says. Okay, chapter 4. Where do we stand here? Yeah, we got time for this. We'll make this the last chapter. there's some interesting things in here. And when Saul's son heard that Abner was dead in Hebron, his hands were feeble, and all the Israelites were troubled. And Saul's son had two men that were captains of bands. The name of one was Baanah, and the name of the other was Rechab, the sons of Rimmon, a Beerothite of the children of Benjamin, for Beeroth also was reckoned to Benjamin. So he had two guys. They were head of bands, meaning groups, you know, like a company of soldiers, probably to protect him, Baanah and Rechab. And these guys are brothers. And the Beerothites fled to Gittaim and were sojourners there until this day. And Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son that was lame of his feet. Now this little part here is an aside to what we're reading. Chapter 4, it has to do with Ishbosheth and these two guys, Baanah and Rechab, but it's given us something else in this one verse. And Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son that was lame in his feet. He was 5 years old when tidings came of Saul and Jonathan out of Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled. And it came to pass, as she made haste to flee, that he fell and became lame. And his name was Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth. What a great name. Mm-hmm. And the sons of Rimmon, Beerothite, Rechab and Baanah, went and came out of the heat of the day to the house of Ishbosheth, who lay on a bed at noon. Now, Rechab is the forefather of a family that's talked about in Jeremiah 35. They're called the Rechabites. And they are commended for their great obedience to Jonadab, the son of Rechab. Okay? And again, eventually we'll probably read that record, but it's a great record. But we're going to see what this guy Rechab is all about. And then when you remember about him later on, and when you read about the Rechabites, you go, well, the family didn't have a good start, but they turned out pretty good.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so they come to the house of Ishbosheth, and he's laying down in his bed, and they came thither into the midst of the house as though they would have fetched wheat, and they smote him under the fifth rib. Rechab and Baanah, his brother, escaped. For when they came into the house, he lay on a bed in his bedchamber, and they smote him and slew him and beheaded him, and took his head and got them away through the pain all night. So they killed him and they ran.
What is he
said? Yeah, they took his head with him. The guy lost his head over the whole thing. And they brought the head of Ishbosheth unto David to Hebron, and said to the king, behold, the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, thine enemy, which sought thy life, and the Lord hath avenged my lord, the king, this day of Saul and his seed. Now, you know, remember David, he really didn't have any animosity towards the family of Saul. As a matter of fact, in one place, Saul asked David, he says, "I know that you're going to be king, remember?" And he says, "I just ask one thing of you, David. You're going to be a great man. Please allow my family to live." And David says, "Yes." Right? Okay. I don't know if you guys remember that, but they had that conversation. So David answered Rechab and Baanah, his brother, the sons of Rimmon, the Beerothite, and said unto them, "As the Lord liveth, who hath redeemed my soul out of all adversity?" So you guys are saying that you did this for me? He said, "God's the one that redeemed me out of all adversity. When one told me, saying, 'Behold, Saul is dead,' thinking to have brought good tidings, I took hold of him and slew him in Ziklag, who thought that I would have given him a reward for his tidings. How much more that when wicked men have slain a righteous person in his own house upon his bed?" How do you know that? I don't know if they told him that or not. But he knew it. "Shall I not therefore now require his blood of your hand and take you away from the earth?" And David commanded his young men, and they slew them and cut off their hands and their feet and hanged them up over the pool in Hebron. But they took the head of Ishbosheth and buried it in the sepulcher of Abner in Hebron. Amen. And that's where we're going to stop at chapter 5. But you know, it's pretty interesting because when David gave his word, he kept it. You know, when he made a covenant, he made a covenant. When he said to Abner, you know, "We're at peace," they were at peace. Okay? And he's the king. He's the one that would make the decision. And then when they killed Ishbosheth, David, a long time before, had promised Saul that he would not take it out on his family. You know, and that's because he had great integrity. He was a man of his word. And you know, God called him a man after his own heart. You know, and that's because David was like that. He just was a great man who had great compassion. He had great love, had a lot of wives.
He didn't cross him.
But yeah, if he didn't do what he wanted, you know, he was tough.
If you were him wrong, you would
But he was a great man, and he listened to God. He walked with God. He inquired of God all the time. So that's it for this week. We'll pick it up again next week. Father God, I thank you for loving us and keeping us safe. I thank you for a great and peaceful night for everyone, and for the joy it is to just look into your word and see these great truths. We thank you for giving us understanding and showing us the greatness of your word and how you bless people when they listen to you and do what you ask. And we thank you in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.